This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Once again today, we're interviewing Michael Garrity. He's Executive Director of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies, which is based in Helena, Montana. He's been the Executive Director since 2002, and he holds a degree in Environmental Economics. So the Alliance for Wild Rockies was founded in 1988 to meet the challenge of saving the Northern Rockies bioregion from habitat destruction. It's composed of thousands of individuals, business owners, and organizations taking a bioregional approach to protect and restore this great region. Its mission is to secure the ecological integrity of the Wild Rockies bioregion. Mike Garrity has been the executive director since early 2002. So welcome, Mike. It's good to talk to you again. We talked last week, and we're picking up our conversation where it ended last time. So here we go.
You also have filed a lawsuit in the Bitterroot Valley over old growth logging.
Yeah, that's the gold butterfly timber sale. It's east of Corvallis.
Uh-huh.
And one of the reasons we sued is there's a lactating wolverine in the project area, which means female wolverine has had kids.
Mm.
And wolverine are listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act.
Mm-hmm.
And wolverine, they survive off of carrion, usually like dead elk or deer. And so the scientific research said, you know, they're sensitive to people. You know, most people have never seen a wolverine.
All right.
And so if they log in big game winter range, then that's going to make it harmful for wolverine, and they didn't even analyze the impact on wolverine. But the other thing they're doing is they're violating the old growth standard in the Bitterroot Forest Plan. They're logging old growth when the forest plan is prohibiting this. And we sued 2 or 3 years ago over that same issue, and they pulled the timber sale. And then the Bitterroot Forest amended their forest plan to change the definition of old growth so they could log. But they did it after they signed the gold butterfly decision for the second time. So they were in such a hurry to go log old growth, they couldn't even wait to amend the forest plan.
So there's a substantial old growth area in the Bitterroot?
Yes, it is. It's in the Sapphire Mountains, so it's as I said, it's just east of Corvallis.
Uh-huh.
And the main stream coming out of the area is called Willow Creek, and that's bull trout critical habitat. But a lot of old growth dependent wildlife species are declining because there's less and less old growth.
Uh-huh.
So so goshawks, for example, are an old growth and mature forest dependent species. Goshawks can turn really sharply in dense trees, and they can pull their wings in to get through very small openings.
Mm.
And when you log a mature old-growth forest, it opens it up,
right.
And then their competitors, which are mainly owls, come in and out-compete the goshawks, and then the goshawks, you know, either die or leave.
Yeah, right.
The main prey of goshawks are red squirrels.
Oh, yeah.
Owls also eat red squirrels. Mm-hmm. The goshawks are really declining and probably should be listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act. So that's why we're trying to protect this habitat, because so many old growth dependent species are declining.
Tell me more about the grizzly and the cabinet yak. You said there are about 50 there right now.
Yeah, it's a little less than 50. I mean, last I heard it was 42.
Uh-huh.
And the numbers keep falling. And, You know, the number of grizzlies being killed by people continues to happen, and so the population is really in trouble. And the Forest Service wants to keep logging and bulldozing more logging roads and having more clear cuts in grizzly bear habitat, and that's just a death sentence for grizzly bears.
I remember a few years ago there was an article that was written, I forget, somebody who lives up there about a trail through the Cabinet Yak. That,
yeah, it was written by Rick Bass.
That's right, yeah. And he was saying that the trail would have impacted the grizzly and it needed to be moved further south, I think.
Yeah, that's what he meant, because it was going to go through the Yak.
Yeah.
And he wanted, which is prime grizzly bear habitat, and he wanted the trail moved south closer to Troy, Montana, along the Kootenai River.
Right.
It's the Pacific Northwest Trail that's supposed to run from the Pacific coast, maybe as far as Minnesota, but I'm not sure. He was concerned that if you put a trail through there, then there'd be more impact with grizzly bears, and they would kill grizzly bears because, you know, people would be camping along the trails.
Right. So what was the outcome of that?
They sued, and the court ordered them to, like, the Forest Service to do some more analysis, but I'm not positive of this, but I think the trail is still allowed to be there, but I'm not positive.
You've had a suit about deforestation and roads in Ashley National Forest. Where is that?
Yeah, that is in Utah, and the Ashley National Forest wanted to commercially log a roadless area there. And so we sued, saying it was violating the roadless rule that, you know, Clinton signed when Mike Dombeck was the head of the Forest Service under Clinton. And after we sued, they pulled the timber sale.
Oh, I see.
So we consider that a big victory.
You're successful on that one, yeah. And how about the Little Belt Mountains up near White Sulphur Springs?
The Little Belt Mountains was the horsefly timber sale I mentioned, just north of White Sulphur.
Right.
Very far north of the Castle Mountains.
Right.
And that one we sued because the forest plan required the Forest Service to monitor every single goshawk nest in the forest every year. And if the population declined more than 10% in a year, it had to notify the public and explain why.
Oh, really?
And they didn't do that.
Yeah.
So we won on that issue. And the goshawk population has been falling a lot in the Lewis and Clark National Forest because they've been logging mature and old-growth forests, which, as I described earlier, is goshawk habitat.
So how long ago was that you filed that suit?
Well, we won it in 2023. I think we filed it in 2021.
Okay. So you haven't really had enough time to really determine what the results were as far as the goshawk is concerned.
No. I mean, we rely on the Forest Service to do the monitoring. They're asking the judge to lift the injunction right now, saying they did a supplemental EA and everything is fine, and so we commented it, and we contend that they are still violating the forest plan. This timber sale was done under the old forest plan.
Yeah.
They ended up combining the Helena and Lewis and Clark National Forest and then wrote a new forest plan they call the revised forest plan. And the revised forest plan eliminated that requirement to monitor goshawk nests annually and explain to the public if they're declining and why they're declining. But the horsefly timber sale, as I said, was in an old forest plan, so the old forest plan still governs what they do, and they didn't comply. They didn't do any new monitoring, and they didn't explain to the public why the goshawk population is declining. And so even under revised, and if they want to try it again under the revised forest plan, which they're doing with the Castle timber sale, the revised forest plan all new forest plans are governed under something called the 2012 planning rule that the Forest Service wrote. And it requires the Forest Service to monitor all sensitive species, which goshawk are the sensitive species of the planet. So either way, they're required to do it, and they don't want to do it because they know that you can't log mature and old-growth forests without hurting goshawks.
So are goshawks the bird that you primarily file suits about protecting?
Yeah, because they're like the canary in the coal mine for old growth and mature forests.
Mm-hmm.
If the goshawk population is healthy, then the old growth forest is healthy.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And that's people, you know, politicians like to talk about healthy forests, but scientifically, a healthy forest is a forest that has all the native species that were there when Europeans first arrived. So that's our definition of a healthy forest, but the Forest Service seems to think a healthy forest is a forest that doesn't have any trees on it.
Yeah. So, are most of your lawsuits about protecting wolves and grizzly bears and maybe wolverine, or are there other species that you also are seeking to protect?
Well, bull trout. We successfully sued years ago, before I came along, to get bull trout listed as a threatened species, and then once I came along, we filed a number of lawsuits to designate critical habitat for bull trout.
Uh-huh.
So bull trout just live in the Columbia River drainage, but also a small part in the Milk River, in the Hudson Bay watershed, where streams coming out of Glacier Park are flowing north into Hudson Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So like Swift Current, I believe, in Glacier Park. So we filed a lot of bull trout lawsuits. I mean, lawsuits to protect habitat in bull trout watersheds, because logging produces more sediment that goes into the streams, and then also the less trees in the watershed, the warmer the water gets. I mentioned goshawks or the canary in the coal mine for old growth and mature forests. Bull trout is the canary in the coal mine for healthy streams and rivers in the Columbia River watershed and the Hudson Bay watershed. Because bull trout need very clean, cold water.
Uh-huh.
And people also need very clean water. So if we're protecting water for bull trout, then we're also protecting it for people.
You know, what I've heard very little about, curiously, is mountain lion. And I haven't heard any much about organizations or lawsuits that have been focused on protecting mountain lion. Why is that?
Well, mountain lions, I don't think are sent. The main threat to mountain lions are just being killed by humans.
Yeah.
And we operate mainly in federal court because federal laws govern, you know, the Forest Service and the BLM. And federal environmental laws are stronger than state environmental laws in Montana and Idaho and Wyoming and Utah. And, because, like, mountain lions aren't necessarily sensitive to logging, we can't stop logging using mountain lions. But if we stop a timber sale, and so they're not building, you know, a lot of new roads in an area, then we're also protecting it from mountain lions.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess we use bull trout and grizzly bears and goshawks because they're considered umbrella species. If you're protecting the habitat for these species, you're protecting the habitat for all the other species that we live in the same, you know, ecosystem.
So mountain lions aren't threatened or endangered in most places, is that right?
No, they're not. I think they're listed as endangered in Florida, some other states in the southeast.
Yeah.
Like panthers out
right.
there, but they're still mountain lions.
Right.
But And they're, you know, they're threatened by, you know, development too, because their habitat is being destroyed, mainly because more and more people are, you know, moving there in Florida.
Right. Right.
And, but yeah, they're, you know, it is a concern about, you know, mountain lions and their population, but they haven't fallen enough in Intermountain West to, or anywhere in the West, to be considered a threat.
Are there
you
any...
asked earlier if we were, what we thought, if we're anti-hunting and trapping. I said we're not anti-hunting, but we are anti-trapping.
Uh-huh.
We just think it's inhumane.
Yeah, it is. Does anyone do population studies of mountain lions?
Scientists do that. We don't, you know, we don't have any. I'm the only, besides this new lawyer we just hired and paid her minimum wage, I'm the only other staff employees here. So but we work with scientists, but like I mentioned, Sarah Johnson, who worked for the Forest Service and the Native Ecosystems Council, she has a PhD. She got her PhD from MSU. But, you know, to do studies, you basically have to be employed either by the Forest Service or a
university. Right.
Yeah, most, I don't know of really any environmental groups that really fund studies.
Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room. How are you coping with the Trump administration's environmental policies?
Well, I just was talking to a reporter earlier that they asked me the same question, and it's really too early to tell.
Yeah.
You know, Trump changes his mind all the time. You know, one day he raises tariffs, and then the next day the stock market crashes, so he lowers them without telling anybody in his own party. I read that congressmen were defending Trump when the reporters told them, well, he just dropped the tariffs again. So we'll have to wait and see what happens with him. And he signed an executive order meant to expedite logging, but it also said that Forest Service has to follow all laws.
Right.
So we'll just have to see how it plays out. But like most of the projects, timber, you know, the logging projects were challenging now, were all signed under the Biden administration.
So at the moment, you don't contemplate any lawsuits ahead regarding the Trump policies?
Oh, we definitely will. Before we can sue, we have to first comment.
Right.
And then we have to, you know, and a lot of times there's two different comment periods, and then there's something called an objection period. And it just takes a while before what the term is called exhaust our administrative remedies, which we have to do before we can file a lawsuit. So Trump's only been president for around 100 days.
Right.
So that's just not long enough for timber sales to be, you know, decisions to be signed and process sued. Yes, it's just, and once they sign the decision, we have to send a Freedom of Information Act request for all their information they have for us to look through and our attorneys to look through, and they have essentially a month to respond to us, and then it takes a while to look through all the information.
Oh, I see.
So all this is time consuming. I have no, you know, belief that Trump is an environmentalist. I know, he says he wants to log more than Biden did.
Right.
But Reagan, when he was president, he logged about 12 billion board feet a year. George, first President Bush, logged a little less than that, maybe 8 or 9 billion. And then under Clinton, he had the Rovers rule, and Mike Dombeck was chief of the Forest Service. And at the end of his term, he got the cut down to less than 2 billion board feet.
Really? Wow.
And then the second President Bush logged more than that. Obama logged more than the second President Bush.
Yeah.
Trump logged more than Obama. Biden logged just a little less than Trump, but I was told that he logged more old growth forest than Trump did.
Oh, really?
Which is ironic, because Biden had his old growth protection plan, but
yeah.
Scientists like Dominic Dalla-Sala told me it was they were saving old growth forest by logging it. And so
it's kind of frustrating, wasn't it?
His Forest Service, in a way, was worse than the Forest Service out of Trump because he logged more old growth forest than Trump did.
Yeah.
And now Trump says he wants to get the cut up to 4 billion feet up. It's around 3 billion now. So he wants to increase it by 25%.
Yeah.
And that's what he's hoping to do with his executive order. So, you know, the more, logging he does, the more we're going to have to sue.
Okay, let's talk about the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act. It's been around for a while. You've been pushing it. What does it do, and what are its prospects?
The prospects under the current Congress and Trump are zero. But we're not giving up. It was first introduced, I believe, in 1992. Or maybe 93.
Uh-huh.
So it's been, more than 30 years.
Uh-huh.
But a lot of, the idea is that conservation biologists have discovered that protecting places like Yellowstone or Glacier or the Bob Marshall Wilderness isn't enough to prevent species from going extinct. We're in the middle of the world's sixth great extinction period right now.
Mm-hmm.
And conservation biologists, based on the work of E.O. Wilson, who was a Harvard biologist, he wrote a book about island biogeography, and he discovered the bigger the island, the more native species it had. And so then there's other conservation biologists who built on that, mainly William Newmark. He's at the University of Utah Natural History Museum.
Uh-huh.
And he went to every national park in the Intermountain West, and he found out the bigger the park, the more native species it had.
Hmm.
But he also decided that he discovered that places like Yellowstone aren't big enough for species to survive in the long run. So, for example, grizzly bears.
Yeah.
John Craighead and Frank Craighead became famous for studying grizzly bears in Yellowstone and National Geographic.
Right.
Named both of them as two of the top 100 scientists of the 20th century. And so John Craighead was one of the brains behind the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act.
Oh, really?
We want grizzly bears to survive over the long run.
Uh-huh.
We need one connected population of grizzly bears in the Northern Rockies.
Uh-huh.
When they were listed as threatened in 1975, they were listed as one population. And he said to be recovered, they once again need to be one population. Right now we have isolated populations of grizzlies. We have the grizzlies in the Yellowstone ecosystem. We have grizzlies in the Glacier Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. We have grizzly bears in the Cabinet Yak. We have grizzly bears in the Selkirks. The North Cascade is a grizzly bear recovery area.
Yeah, but Northern Cascades, I heard they're plan to reintroduce grizzly bears to that area has been put on hold.
Yeah, I read that too. And then there's the Central Idaho ecosystem, which is also a grizzly bear recovery zone, and grizzly bears are starting to return there on their own.
Uh-huh.
And so what Craig had said is we need to, connect all these areas. And
right.
The way to do it is focus on travel corridors where grizzly bears could naturally migrate from one ecosystem to the next. And so based on protecting roadless areas, there's about 23 million acres of roadless areas in the Northern Rockies. So western Montana, western Wyoming, all of Idaho, eastern Oregon, and Washington. And so if we protect all these roadless, inventory roadless areas that Clinton designated it under the Robust Rule as wilderness, and then protect the corridors on public lands between these areas by limiting roads, that grizzly bears would survive over the long run because they'd be one connected population, and then inbreeding wouldn't be a threat. And if we, since grizzly bears are an umbrella species, we're also protecting all the other native species in the area.
Right.
And the Northern Rockies is unique. Professor Newmark testified at a hearing before Congress that the Northern Rockies are one of the few places in the world where we can stop the sixth great extinction, but only if we protect the Northern Rockies ecosystem by doing something like passing the Northern Rockies Ecosystem Protection Act.
Right, right.
And then a simple way to think about it is, so he told me is, and he testified, if you have a isolated population of people, like 500 people that don't interact with the outside world, well, that eventually that population would become inbred and then die out. And in polygamous colonies on the Arizona-Utah border right now, they're seeing that, because these polygamous colonies, there's inbreeding going on because they're, you know, the nature of polygamy. And they're seeing a lot of weird diseases where people are really born mentally impaired because of inbreeding.
Yeah. Do you have any sponsors or supporters in Congress?
Yeah, we have. It was introduced by Senator Whitehouse in the Senate, and I believe there's 9 sponsors altogether. And then it was introduced in the House by Congresswoman Dean from Eastern Pennsylvania.
Oh, really?
And it's been introduced in every Congress since 1992 or 93, so it's over 30 years. And people say, well, it's not going anywhere. But I then counter, well, it's a big idea to protect the ecosystem.
Yeah.
And big new ideas take time for people to accept it.
Yeah.
African Americans have been fighting for their civil rights in America for, 400 years.
Yeah.
Women have been fighting for their rights in America for, over 200 years. LGBT people have been fighting for their rights for over 100 years. No one tells them to give up. I don't know why they're telling us to give up.
All right. Well, Mike, we have run out of time, but this has been very informative and very helpful. So thank you very much.
I just want to close by first saying thank you, and then you said you're sponsored by the Gallatin Wildlife Association. We work very closely with them.
Right.
And we've done several different lawsuits with them. And we're big supporters of them, and they're big supporters of us. So.
Well, thank you very much. It's been very interesting to talk to you. Thanks a lot. So just
thanks
hang on.
Thanks for interviewing me. I appreciate it.
This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. We've been talking today to Michael Garrity, Executive Director of the Alliance for the Wild Rockies, based in Helena. More information about the Gallatin Wildlife Association and its activities can be found on its website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.